Welcome to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Here are your hosts, Jeff Carrier and Seth Lull.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Back for another great episode to be talking waiver wires and some streamers heading into week 9 of the NFL season. I am your host, Jeff Carrier, and by my side is Seth Lull. And it is the trade deadline in the NFL, Seth, and a little bit more surprising than other years. We've had a couple trades that have already happened here that we get to talk about this evening as we talk about our waiver wire episode. Let's start with the little less significant trade, and that was Dwayne Brown to Seattle. Seattle gets a huge upgrade at left tackle, a much needed upgrade. What, if any, role, you know, do you see this kind of playing out in Seattle? I'm sure this might not have a huge fantasy impact, but just in terms of the trade and for the team as a whole.
Well, from a fantasy perspective, it's got to be good for Russell Wilson. It can't hurt that running game either. In real life, I looked at this trade, and at first glance, I kind of like it for Houston. I think it helped both teams out. But from Houston's perspective, you pick up a second-round pick, a fifth-round pick. You pick up a solid corner in Jeremy Lane. Houston's been, you know, had a lot of injuries at the cornerback position this year. And you lose a guy that you didn't really have at all year. They just got him back on Sunday. So I think Houston won this trade in real life. And in fantasy, it's only going to help Seattle. So I think it's a win-win.
I agree. It is one of those best for both teams. Houston has been playing without Dwayne Brown all year. They pick up a couple of draft picks. They're not going to re-sign him at the end of the season. He is kind of on, obviously, the wrong side of 30 years old. And from Seattle's standpoint, you know, I don't know how much longer or what Dwayne Brown would do next year. He has to play out the rest of this year to get credit for playing this year. But he's signed through 2018. So in Seattle's view and standpoint is that they could just say, hey, you're underneath contract, and we also have another really good tight left tackle for all of 2018 as well. So it is a good bump to both teams. Now, the bigger impact trade, at least for two quarterback leagues for the most part, and of course it's going to help out some of the pieces out in San Francisco, I would call it very surprising trade from my perspective, Seth, because we heard all offseason that New England's not trading Jimmy Garoppolo. We heard this from Adam Schefter. He was, you know, adamant about it, and he was correct. We heard that Cleveland was offering the 12th overall pick last year and maybe even more, and New England wanted the first overall pick. Didn't obviously happen, and there was even reports that they wouldn't take two first-rounders. Who knows what the actual correct story is, but long story short, here now in the middle of 2017, they trade Jimmy Garoppolo for a second rounder, what will likely be pick 33 or 34, which will be a really nice pick, but obviously what seems like a big downgrade from where they could have gotten what they could have gotten out of him in the middle of the offseason.
Yeah, I think if you're going to trade Jimmy Garoppolo, you should have done it in this past offseason to try and load up and help Tom Brady out in within one of the last few years, probably of his career. You know, they've been struggling in the secondary. They have no pass rush. They could use help at receiver. There's a lot of holes the Patriots have now that you're like, wow, that 12th overall pick could have been really handy. So I think that was definitely surprising. I agree. But you know, it's gonna be a very high second round pick, which is awesome for New England. So, you know, I think it's a decent return. I don't know what changed between the offseason and now, though. You know, Jimmy Garoppolo hasn't played unless and it's just weird that they can't. You think they could trade him and get a player in return that could help them this year, but as a pick that they can't cash until next season. So a little odd, but I think overall, I think a great trade for San Francisco.
Phenomenal trade. We talk about this all the time. Like, just give up one of these draft picks. Like, maybe you don't want to give up a first rounder, but you can't say even as high as a pick that San Francisco's will be in the second round. You can't tell me that all of these second rounders are going to amount to what could end up being as impactful as a potential franchise quarterback. So why not give up the second rounder? Look what Kansas City did when San Francisco moved on from Alex Smith. I mean, apparently there was a pretty hot market for Alex Smith. Kansas City gave them, I believe, the 33rd overall pick. And look at how many years later they didn't win a Super Bowl by any means. But obviously, what would that second round pick have done in this in course of this time that Alex Smith hasn't been able to do or prove with that 33rd overall pick that the Chiefs gave up? I see it the same way with San Francisco. I comment a lot about this when Seattle was looking for their quarterback when Pete Carroll first got there. They were just picking up quarterbacks and just throwing them, you know, just, they got Matt Flynn and they got the other guy from Minnesota that was kind of the running around quarterback. They drafted Russell Wilson. They're just getting everyone. And at least with San Francisco, it's like, okay, they tried Brian Hoyer, didn't work. Drafted C.J. Beathard, didn't work. Let's go out and give another draft pick for Jimmy Garoppolo. Who knows? But obviously a sign that they're making every commitment they can to try and solve that issue, that one position.
Yeah, and he becomes a top pickup. He'll be in our waiver wire segment for sure. Really interesting player because, you know, Brian Hoyer's had some big games, you know, a couple big games earlier in the year, and they have Kyle Shanahan, who's pretty aggressive for a team that lacks the talent that that offense does. So he's going to be, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo in a two-quarterback league is going to be especially intriguing for the rest of this season.
I think you brought up a good point. I just wanted to go back and touch on this because I think this trade is so intriguing. I know not huge for fantasy purposes, especially in one quarterback leagues, but this was one of the biggest topics of the offseason, which was super intriguing because you have New England, you have Bill Belichick. Do they make the transition to Jimmy Garoppolo? Do they force Tom Brady out? And I've kind of told you, Seth, and I'll admit, I was like, you know what? How do they pass up on someone who's 26 years old? Who can seemingly, what we've been, at least been able to see, at least in a few regular season games and some preseason, should be able to get you to the playoffs almost automatically. Like, with the rest of the New England team and Jimmy Garoppolo, if they had the transition there, you're almost a guaranteed automatic playoff team. How do you move on from that as a regime that is so focus on the future as they are today? So I thought there's no way they get rid of him. And so what do you think changed? Do you think they just wanted to see Tom Brady at the age of 40, see if he could still do it, and everything they've been able to see in practice and obviously the regular season gives them all indications that he can play a couple more years, and that's the reason why they made it?
I think that had to have been it, and they've seen Tom Brady look like, you know, the same old Tom Brady, just the best quarterback in the NFL. And they saw the chance to get a high second round pick, what's going to be a very good second round pick in return for Garoppolo. And they wanted to move him now before his value, you know, continues to go down. And they probably weren't going to franchise him. I know some people think that they would have franchised him and carried two quarterbacks, making probably combined like $40 million, but that wasn't going to happen. So I think they moved on from him. They, you know, they sent him out of the conference, which is also helpful. So it's not like he's going to Buffalo or Miami or New York. And they get a second-round pick. The only thing that's weird for me is, why wouldn't you do this before the season? Get a player that can help you this year. I mean, the window for Tom Brady, even if he has two or three more years, that's still a small window compared to the window you had with Garoppolo, which is 10-plus.
Yeah, still surprising. I still think that they really need to see it on the field in, you know, live game speed for the regular season with Brady. And on, I think, I guess that insurance policy was worth it. Like, hey, do we get the 12th overall pick now and run the risk that Brady is just not the same? Or do we just not give up Garoppolo, make sure that Brady's okay? And if he is, then great. You know, we lose a little bit of draft equity, but we have Tom Brady, who's Tom Brady. So maybe that was their thinking. It was worth the risk. Here's the better question, and maybe, or I'll be curious to see how many people bring this up tomorrow, and everyone should be bringing this up. Where was Cleveland during this? So San Francisco gives up maybe, let's just say, best case scenario, the 33rd overall pick. Cleveland has, what, multiple first rounders? They probably have multiple second rounders. I'm not too sure what their draft situation is, but we know that they have a lot of picks. Cleveland could have easily offered up two second rounders, second and third. Late first. I mean, where was Cleveland?
The only thing I can think of is Cleveland knows. I mean, Cleveland's in full tank mode, and they're terrible, so they don't really have to try that hard to tank either. The only thing I can think of is that they know they're going to have the first overall pick this season, and there's a quarterback they have their eye on that they really like. should be a strong quarterback class. That has to be the reason. Otherwise, you know, you have all these draft picks. What are you waiting for, Cleveland? They already passed on Carson Wentz, Dak Prescott, Deshaun Watson. I mean, they pass on a ton of these quarterbacks that are stepping up and performing right out the gate in a big way. So I don't know, but I stopped trying to understand Cleveland. It's just not worth it.
And I don't even care, though, if your comment about what they're thinking is accurate, which I guess does make some sense. There's a pretty big, you know, quarterback class supposedly coming out. But who cares? Go and spend 2 second rounders. Get Garoppolo. If you have to franchise him. You have tons of money underneath the cap. And go draft a quarterback at first overall. What's the worst case scenario? You have two really good quarterbacks and then you can trade one of them. If that's worst case scenario, I mean, do everything you can to get more, you know, bodies, more blood into that position at quarterback and solve the issue. Yep. They still obviously a huge blunder for Cleveland and completely missing the boat.
Yeah. And if you trade it, if you're Cleveland and you trade a second, a third and a fourth, let's say you just did that to get Garoppolo, you play him for the remaining 8 games of the season. You see what you have in him. If he impresses and you think he's the future, then you have the first overall pick, or maybe it's a little bit lower because Garoppolo helped you actually win a game. Then you can use that a top 5 pick on another player. You don't have to use it on a quarterback. You have a chance to audition Jimmy Garoppolo. Either he impresses and you use the pick elsewhere, or he doesn't turn out to be what you thought he was going to be, and then you use that pick for a quarterback. But then, you know, either way, you win because you have the luxury of all those high draft picks. But it's Cleveland. What do you expect?
Guess we can't expect anything else.
But what really is like annoying to me as a Patriots fan is, why did Belichick trade Jacoby Brissett for Philip Dorsett? That trade makes no sense.
I completely agree. That's a great point. I know we never really talked about it because at the time the trade was done, I don't know, maybe it wasn't relevant enough to talk about. But clearly, as Brissett has played fairly decent in that anemic, you know, low-talented team and poorly coached overall team, Brissett's actually looked a little bit better than I thought he was going to look. Definitely has his shortcomings. But the point is, as you mentioned, you have a guy who's got three more years under a rookie contract, and you get Philip Dorsett in return? What is the idea there?
Makes no sense. It makes zero sense.
Yeah, that's frustrating. Okay, let's move on, Seth. We're going to do my interesting stats, and then we're going to get to your waiver pickups of the week. Let's get right into it. My first stat is Stephon Diggs ran routes on 90% of the snaps. Now, the idea here is, and I think on some of these, I'm going to try and give you my thought process here, then you give me your feedback. Obviously, Stephon Diggs did not have a great game. Thielen had a much more significant game than Diggs did. But this is a good indication that coming back from the injury, and I know that Minnesota's on bye this week, that coming back from the injury, he basically played his full complement of snaps. This is my takeaway.
Well, that's got to be that's a good thing. All right, that's a step in the right direction if you're a Diggs owner. I mean, he's on the field, which he hadn't been for the previous two games. So that's a good sign. I think the issue with Minnesota is Case Keenum. He's good enough to be a okay streaming option against a bad team like Cleveland, but he's just not good enough to allow consistency from his supporting cast like Stephon Diggs. Stephon Diggs is not going to be consistent under Case Keenum. So he needs to get Bradford back. Step one was him getting on the field. He's got to stay healthy. That's number one. Number two is they have to find a way to get Bradford back, because under Case Keenum, I don't care how many snaps Stephon did. He play 100% of the snaps, and they could all be in route. And I just don't think he's going to be as consistent. He was the number one fantasy receiver after the first
three weeks.
Yeah. And he's been a far cry from that, mostly because he hasn't been on the field. So good that he's on the field, but that quarterback situation in Minnesota, and it's a shame because if you were to tell me that Bradford was going to be healthy for the remainder of the season, not only would Diggs be a top 10 fantasy receiver, but the Minnesota Vikings might be the favorite to come out of the NFC.
Yeah, and Keenum, as you said, is streamable most weeks, but he's not really the quarterback to necessarily – make two of his pieces, wide receivers or whatever they may be, really fantasy relevant from week to week. So Thielen was very fantasy relevant this week. I think 2 weeks ago he was. There was 1 week that Dig was, you know, had a big blow up week against Tampa Bay. But it's going to be hard for him to keep Thielen and Diggs relevant from week to week. If I were to ask you, are you buying or selling Diggs, knowing exactly the situation as it is now? We're getting close to trade deadlines. A lot of people have them for week 9, week 10. We suggest that if you don't have a trade deadline, you put one in. Usually right around these upcoming weeks is typically when commissioners will put them in at the end of week 9, maybe beginning or end of week 10, usually the latest. Knowing that Keenum may or may not start the rest of the year, there's a Bridgewater situation, there's Bradford and whatever his situation is, are you buying or selling Diggs?
Selling. I think you have to, just because I think that Diggs is a sexy enough name in fantasy where I think a lot of people are going to want to trade for him. I think you're going to get decent value for Diggs because of his name value. I think he's one of those players that's going to be a little bit more overvalued on the open market. So I would say sell. I mean, obviously it depends on what you're getting in return. I'm not going to give him away. I'm not in the situation. I wouldn't be in a situation with Diggs like I am in a couple of my leagues with DeMarco Murray, where I'm basically looking to just give him away as a Christmas present to somebody. But I think Diggs would have to sell.
It's a pretty mean Christmas present.
Yeah, it's a really bad Christmas present. And needless to say, I don't think I'm going to be getting too many good offers for DeMarco Murray's services. But Diggs, if I had him, I would absolutely shop him. I mean, if he's healthy, you have to. The problem with Diggs is, as long as Sam Bradford's not the quarterback, if Diggs isn't healthy, you're wasting a roster spot on him and he's not playing. If he is healthy, you have to start him for probably, most likely, given, you know, depending on your roster situation. But he's always going to be a risky start because it's going to be completely up in the air from week to week in terms of his production.
I'm kind of on the other side. I think I would buy. And, of course, this has a lot to do depending on price. Diggs owners who probably have him probably carry, you know, a lot of weight in his name, and they had him on those weeks that he blew up, and you still kind of have those hopes, especially with the positive game matchups that they have for their schedule this season and with the potential of St. Bradford returning. You still kind of have that high hopes because Keenum's still doing a decent job of getting the ball to his receivers. It was still his first game back, and he still looked good out there. His floor was still, I think, 9 or 10 points. So I think I'd still be buying. Let me throw out a name, though, and see which side you would rather be on. Diggs or Lamar Miller?
To me, that just comes down to need. I think they're very even. If I had, if I was pretty well set, let's say I had like Melvin Gordon and Zeke, or Melvin Gordon, insert another really good running back there. And I had pretty crappy receivers, maybe Pierre Garçon, DeSean Jackson, something like that. Then I would go Diggs, right? And I would do that trade. But if I am hurting at running back and I have to start Theo Riddick or I have to start James White and Bilal Powell, then I'm absolutely doing the trade to get Lamar Miller. I think, and there's a gun to my head and I had to pick without, if you said, you had to start a team with one of those two players and I didn't already have a roster to make the decision easier, I would probably lean towards Lamar Miller just because he's so consistent and I like him moving forward. There was no Deontay Foreman on Sunday, which is a good sign for Lamar Miller. He caught a touchdown. He's just a good, well-rounded fantasy running back. I think I would lean towards Lamar Miller. Obviously, Stephon Diggs' talent is far greater than Lamar Miller, but you don't play fantasy football based on how these players are in real life. I mean, Diggs is just too inconsistent for fantasy purposes because of his quarterback situation. For that reason, I'd go with the less sexy player in Lamar Miller.
I guess we differ on this a little bit. I'm still going with Diggs, and he still has way too much upside. He still has 1 point less than Michael Thomas and Doug Baldwin on the entire year, and he left one game early and missed the following 2 weeks. So he's got that kind of blow potential that Lamar Miller is just never going to get. It seems like, even though the team can apparently score a million points without Lamar Miller getting many touchdowns, which is crazy, I'm still putting out a lot of hope in Diggs, just because we saw him basically miss three games. He left the game early and missed two games. So it's kind of like one of those, what have you done for me lately, that I think might be impacting our decision right now, or bias. But let's move on.
The bias. It took a while. I was a little late to respond to that. It just took a while to set in. I was like, bias?
I know you were right.
That's got to be up there on the list of Jeffisms.
And that was a new one there. I even, as soon as I said, I just paused. I'm like, oh, that doesn't sound right. Okay, next one is not too sure what to really make out of this, but Deion Lewis had the most touches at running back for New England with 17.
I don't make anything. I'm so over the New England Patriots running back situation over the years. You have James White, who, you know, fresh off the Super Bowl performance against Atlanta, he put all his skills on full display, and you thought that he could be the guy to maybe, you know, get 90 catches. You know, he's not going to get a ton of carries, but just get just enough carries to keep the defense honest and allow him to be in the game for more snaps. And then you have Gillislee, who's been non-existent. Deion Lewis has been their number one rusher in terms of carries. And then Rex Burkhead's involved now. I don't know. It seems like it changes week to week. Everything New England does, obviously, is game plan specific. It changes every week, which I don't understand with running backs how that works, because it's not, you know what I mean? It's frustrating. So I don't know. I wouldn't read too much into it. I mean, Deion Lewis isn't catching passes this year, and he's not getting, you know, two touchdowns on the entire season. So he's not a, you know, big goal line back who is going to get vulture a lot of touchdowns, and he doesn't catch passes. So I don't know. I think in order for Deion Lewis to be fantasy relevant, somebody has to either get injured or get traded out of New England at the running back position.
Yeah, I think that if you were to say, hey, if this running back got 17 touches, on most cases, you're going to say, well, I'm pretty happy with that. If this running back got 17 touches a week, you're going to say, oh, that's pretty good. The biggest issue here is that out of those 17 touches, none of them is hardly ever going to come on the goal line. He did have that one where they took out Gillislee after the fumble, and he got that. On the flip side, though, it is a good amount of touches and a good offense, right? 17 this past week, 14 the previous week. Not great. I think it's still worth being rosterable, but it's very on the fringe of ever being starter worthy, because his floor, he's really like just going to be between 8 and 11 points, and that's what you can count out of him.
Yeah, he's got extremely low upside, you know, potential, and it just depends on how big your bench spot is. You know, I think he's worth maybe, I would be okay rostering him for another week or two to see if, you know, something changes with this backfield in terms of, you know, is somebody going to get traded? Is someone going to go down with an injury? Will Deion Lewis, you know, all of a sudden overnight turn into a workhorse? Because you can never, you know, predict what Belichick's going to do. But it's hard to imagine rostering Deion Lewis for, you know, an extended period of time if he's going to continue putting up, you know, just 8 to 10 points a game.
Okay, next stat I have, Seth, is Michael Thomas still led his team again in team target share percentage at 30% last week. 30% is a ton. I kind of bring this up only because maybe there are some Michael Thomas owners that, you know, maybe getting frustrated, maybe wishing he came. No doubt, he's putting up good weeks, but not great weeks. But at 30%, this is only a volume issue now. New Orleans has played 4 out of the last 5 games against Trubisky, Cutler, Hundley, and Newton. They haven't needed to throw. So I think that plays a little bit into the role of Michael Thomas. He still had 7 catches the last 2 games apiece. I guess this is kind of more of a, hey, let's not overreact scenario. If you can buy low on Michael Thomas, go ahead and do it. Any game that's going to force Drew Brees to throw the ball, what we're accustomed to seeing New Orleans and Drew Brees throw the ball, he's going to have a big blow-up game because he's still getting 30% of the targets. It's not like that has changed.
New Orleans is the most, might be the most frustrating fantasy offense this year if you don't own one of their two running backs. Because I own Drew Brees in a league. You and I at league, we're managing together. We own Michael Thomas. And he's, I'm with you on the buy low. If you can buy him low, I think he's a great buy low candidate. But he's just, if you own him now, up to this point, you've been really frustrated. And I hate New Orleans' schedule. I mean, 13, 14, and 15, you know, Carolina, Atlanta, Jets. That's a good stretch, but you got to get through these next few weeks. You got Tampa at home, which, I mean, I don't love that matchup. I mean, it's bad defense, but, I mean, is Tampa, the way they've been playing, are they really going to be able to force New Orleans to throw? Then you play in Buffalo. That's a terrible matchup for the Saints. Washington at home, in the at the Rams. I mean, some, you know, you think Washington would be a game that they could move the ball against and have to throw, but I just don't love this stretch. I don't know what it is. And with that being said, though, if you can buy Michael Thomas low, I would go for it. Just the problem with Michael Thomas is you're not going to get him for pennies on the dollar. So maybe you can get him at an okay value, but you're also getting a borderline average fantasy receiver who just hasn't been dominant. He's had a couple good weeks. That's the problem with Michael Thomas.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what a potential trade could be, but I'm not going to try and do that right now because I didn't even think about it. But, you know, four out of the last five games, you know, 7-7, 8-7 catches. It's got the team target share. You just got to get that typical New Orleans, you know, 45, 50 pass attempts to really cash in on some of these games. And I think down the stretch there on what you mentioned during the playoffs with, I think, playing Atlanta twice, he'll be able to do that. And even with the Jets, they've been able to put up some points. So we'll see, but you're right. You know, next week against Tampa, who knows if Jameis Winston's even playing, that might be another scenario where they just go back to the ground game because they have a lead and the opponent's offense couldn't do anything.
Yep.
Next is Jonathan Stewart out-touched Christian McCaffrey 11-9.
Oh man, I just don't get it. It's tiring trying to understand why coaches do the things they do with running backs. There's no reason that Christian McCaffrey should be getting less touches than Jonathan Stewart. It just makes no sense. Jonathan Stewart's not a great runner. He's not a great receiver. I mean, maybe he knows, and I'm sick of it, like the whole, oh, he's better in pass protection, and he knows the offense better. He knows, the protections. It's just, I would rather give me the player that can actually make plays. I mean, yeah, if Christian McCaffrey is terrible in pass protection, then that's an issue to an extent, but he's just a much better playmaker. At the very least, he's a much better playmaker in the passing game. And you can't tell me that if you give Christian McCaffrey 20 carries and then you give Jonathan Stewart 20 carries, that you're not going to be much happier with the production you get out of McCaffrey with those 20 carries.
Quiz question. How many games has Christian McCaffrey received more than 8 carries?
One,
and it was week one. This is exactly what I got all up in arms about, and I talked to you in terms of our dynasty rookie drafts. I talked about it on air here numerous times. I talked about it on other podcasts that people love Christian McCaffrey's talent. Well, so do I. But Carolina's not going to be able to figure out how to use a running back, and they have made it so evident they don't know how to use him. And I really don't want to hear, well, he's been catching the ball a lot. Yeah, he has. They've been using him in the slot as a slot receiver. But don't you think it make more sense to utilize a weapon like Christian McCaffrey, like coming out of the backfield, maybe motioning or throwing to him out of the backfield a little bit more, and versus having Jonathan Stewart in the backfield and having Christian McCaffrey in the slot? It's just like even when they throw to him and try and use him, I don't feel like they're fully utilizing him in the best way that they could. So, I mean, I think you should line him up in slot sometimes, but it's almost like they drafted a running back to play slot receiver at pick 8 overall. I mean,
yeah, exactly. I was gonna say they didn't draft him in the top 10 of the first round to be a receiver. I mean, he's not a first round receiver. His value comes in the fact that he's a running back that's also a very good receiver. And you can't tell me you can't just keep Christian McCaffrey on the field, You know, bring him in the backfield, hand the ball off with like a quick draw or something, and then motion him out. It's just going to mess with the defense's head so much more than you bring him out. Here comes Jonathan Stewart. Okay, they're either going to run or it's going to be a play action. But I'm not surprised. I mean, we see a lot of coaches, a lot of different teams operate in the same fashion with regards to running backs. I think they just completely overthink it.
All right, next one is Redskins. Let's see, we'll get some stats on here in terms of their route percentage. Josh Dotson was running routes on 81% of the snaps, but saw less target share than Ryan Grant. Josh Dotson only had 8% target share versus Ryan Grant's 18%, and he was only running routes on 67%. This one was one of those, like, interesting. Don't know what to make out of it. Kind of confusing. Maybe the fact that Josh Dotson's on the field a lot, maybe that's a positive sign to take out of this. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a positive sign for Josh Dotson. And we might be, you know, talking about him in the waiver wire segment. So not to give anything away there, but I think it's about time that somebody emerges from the Washington receiving core and steps up to be an actual fantasy asset, because Terrell Pryor has been MIA all season. Jamison Crowder up until yesterday was completely MIA all season. Jordan Reed is shocking. He's injured again. So Kirk Cousins needs some help. He has absolutely nothing to work with outside of Chris Thompson.
Okay, last one I have here. This is kind of an ugly stat, but a lot of people have to deal with ugly situations at tight end. Just kind of throwing a dart at the wall here. And Jesse James ran on 80% of the routes played last night or on Sunday's game. And the reason I bring this up is because Vance McDonald was out. So Jesse James got the bulk of the work, ran 80% of the snaps, and I don't know if Vance McDonald's going to be out again. If you're looking for a streamer, I know he didn't have a great game, but the fact that the volume was kind of there in terms of him being on the field, again, I'm kind of grasping at straws here, but I figured to throw something else.
Clearly.
Some of us, like me, are in atrocious tight end situations that just can't buy a tight end. You know my two tight ends were in one league? One was George Kittle, who caught like no passes, and the other person almost lost his leg, Zach Miller. Okay, so literally almost lost his leg. I mean, they had to like put him in. I guess he broke his artery, and they had to run to the emergency room, and he almost lost his leg. So I'm back to zero tight ends again, as if I had any in the first place.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I guess maybe you could pick up Jesse James. He still only had 3 targets. So
I know it's pretty bad.
I mean, I really just don't care how many snaps you play if you only get 3 targets and you play for a team that never throws to their tight ends ever, really, anyways. So,
all right, touche. Okay. All right, let's get on to your waiver pickups of the week.
Let's make some noise, okay? Let's make some noise in the waiver wire segment.
Let's do it.
It's been a couple slow weeks. Time to make a little bit of noise. We got some good players on here. I'm going to start with quarterbacks. We already talked about him at the beginning, so let's not spend too much time on him. But Jimmy Garoppolo, obviously, you have to pick him up if you're in a 2-quarterback league. Just based on the potential, I don't think he's a must pick up. He's in a 2-quarterback league. He's nobody that I'm going to be spending 25% of my fab budget on by any means. But he's definitely worth spending maybe 5 to 10%, especially if you are hurting at quarterback. And you are starting, you know, someone like Trevor Siemian, who, you know, we're recording this during the Monday night game right now, and Trevor Siemian is an absolute car crash, even against one of the worst NFL pass defenses in the Chiefs. So if you're in a situation like that, then, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo is a solid pickup.
Okay, let me give you in a 2-quarterback league, just real quick here. You know, do you drop this person? Do you place a claim in to drop this person for Jimmy Grops? Trevor Siemian sounds like a yes. Brett Hundley?
I'd say no, because because obviously I like Green Bay's offense much better than San Fran's.
Okay,
He's been in the system longer. He already has that first start under his belt. He got all the You know, you got all the kind of the jitters out, and you know, knocked a lot of the rust out in that one start. And I just like his ability to rush the football and get rushing yards. I don't know. I don't think it'd be crazy to drop Hundley for Garoppolo, because I think Garoppolo has more upside throwing the ball. But I would lean towards just keeping Brett Hundley.
Okay, I agree. Jay Cutler.
Jeez. I would probably drop Jay. The tough thing is Garoppolo going to start right away? I mean, do you need a quarterback right away?
Let's assume that he's going to start this weekend, because I mean, let's be serious.
I've seen enough out of Cutler. Okay. I would.
Blake Bortles. Yes or no? We'll do this real quick here.
I would lean towards no.
Okay. Eli Manning.
No.
Joe Flacco.
Yes.
All right, that's all I get. Okay. And I want to quickly interrupt here. I don't know if I can read this correctly. Now, remember last time I read something that Adam Schefter tweeted in midair? I thought that John Fox got a 5-year extension with Chicago Bears. So hopefully I read this correctly here. But Adam Schefter just tweeted, "Judge denied the NFLPA motion for prelim injunction, but is keeping TRO in place for 24 hours to let NFLPA decide about filing appeal to Second Circuit."
I don't know what any of this means. It's just this is unbelievable.
Does that mean that? So that means it's the. So he's technically still suspended. However, NFLP has 24 hours to appeal to the second court, and then I guess he may get a stay if the second court hears it. Right.
I guess as it relates to this waiver wire segment, I refuse to put Alfred Morris or Darren McFadden on this waiver wire list. Yeah.
Judge denies Ezekiel Elliott request injunction. His 6-game suspension is back in effect. So this is getting to scary territory now for Zeke owners, including yourself, Seth, because week 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, you're already guaranteed, if he missed this week, you're already guaranteed the first week of the playoffs. If he waits one more week, then you're going to miss the second week of the playoffs. And then, of course, every subsequent week before that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a good situation, obviously. I mean, if you're a Zeke owner, you're probably hoping that he misses the game against the Chiefs in week 9. And then, you know, for me, for example, I'm probably not getting a first round bye, so I'm looking at not having him for the week 1. You know, and you're looking at getting him for the last two rounds of the fantasy playoffs. The only thing that I have going for me in the league that I own Zeke is it's a keeper league, and I got him at a pretty good price. So, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know. It's good and bad, mostly bad, obviously, because losing Zeke, he's just starting to catch his stride too, and just being an absolute workhorse.
All right, let's tough to have too many thoughts on that as the news just broke and we don't know what you would think the appeal would be from Zeke, what that will do. So, okay, your next player.
All right, so we're gonna go to running backs now. Not a great week for fantasy running backs. I do have Rex Burkhead on here. If you can afford to roster him, I'm not going to be dropping anybody. You know, I wouldn't recommend dropping anybody of value to go and grab Burkhead. You know, I don't think that he's worth, you know, an urgent, like, you know, pick up on the waivers and, you know, spend all your fab budget, especially with New England coming up on the bye for week 9, right? But because they're coming up on a bye, you might be able to get him for next to nothing. So I think he's solid. I mean, he clearly looked good on Sunday. He's getting carries. He's being involved in the passing game. And we don't know. You never know how that New England running back field is going to shake out. So, you know, there's been some chatter that maybe Mike Gillisley could be on the trade block. So I think it's worth to pick up Rex Burkhead. I mean, he got 4 carries. But he had 7 catches for 68 yards, which is the good thing, I guess. So in a year when, you know, at this point in the year when there's not too many good running backs available on the wire, I think Rex Burkhead is an okay option.
Yeah, I believe he caught, 7 passes last week, if I remember correctly here. 7 passes. So anytime and was catching seven passes out of the backfield. They were definitely worth a look. So back end of your roster, you never know if someone goes down with an injury or gets just more usage as they get more comfortable with an offense as a new person on the team. So,
and my next one for running backs is Alex Collins. Now, Danny Woodhead should come back at some point. I'm going to put Danny Wood's on my list too, so I'll put both of them kind of in one category. Alex Collins slash, you know, either or Danny Woodhead. And when Danny Woodhead comes back, he is going to be the third down back. He's going to be the pass catcher. Alex Collins doesn't catch passes at all. That's been Javorius Allen, who's kind of filled Danny Woodhead's shoes over the past, you know, few weeks since Woodhead got injured. But Alex Collins looked amazing. And I believe he leads the NFL in yards per attempt, yards per carry, for all the running backs that have enough carries to qualify. And you watch the game against Miami on Thursday, and every time he touches the ball, he gets positive yardage. He looks like an absolute beast. Zero touchdowns on the season. So, you know, I expect that to change at some point. And I don't know. I like Alex Collins. You watch him. He looked amazing. Once Danny Woodhead comes back, it's going to be bye-bye Javorius Allen. I think Alex Collins continues to be the lead back and continues to get the carries on first and second down.
Yeah, I think he looks good. I think you need to work in a few more words in your vocabulary between like average and amazing, because I'm not going to start saying Alex Collins looks amazing, especially on that type of game flow where Miami just didn't do anything at all. But Alex Collins is going to be available this upcoming week, and then Baltimore has their bye week 10, and then that will be the first time that Danny Woodhead is eligible to return. I think he could start practicing this week, if I remember correctly. So that will be a big sign to see if in 2 weeks he'll be able to step on the field. And when he does, you know, the anticipation is that, you know, he should slide right into the third down role. But, you know, as a Danny Woodhead owner, got him stuck in my IR spot. Yeah, I don't know what to think. You know, I mean, he's definitely worth a pickup, like no doubt about that. I just don't know what to expect for someone who's over the age of 30, got injured week one, he had to sit 10 games, a disastrous offense. Hopefully that he could just gobble up catches and be somewhat relevant through that with the PPR floor, but not really sure what to expect.
Yeah, at the end of the day, we're still talking about Baltimore running backs, right, and they're all fairly irrelevant given how bad that offense is. So, yeah, probably, you know, not great options, right? Alex Collins, not a great option. Rex Burkhead, these are more, I guess, for deeper leagues. They're available. Alex Collins available in 32% of ESPN leagues. Rex Burkhead available in, you know, 8.4%, or only owned in 8.4% of leagues. You know, a couple solid options. So that's pretty much it for running backs. I mean, is there anybody that you thought of that I'm leaving out for running backs? I mean, a very grim week for running backs overall.
No, I mean, I think that you'll want to keep an eye on the Jacksonville situation to make sure Fournette's back. They had a bye, so I would anticipate, I haven't heard anything otherwise, but, you know, Yeldon did have that good week 2 weeks ago. Sometimes when teams come on bye, they go a little bit underneath the radar. I would definitely look at some of our previous weeks, too, because we've had people like Marlon Mack, who had another decent game, I believe. So there's some people there, but no, I don't think so.
And this is an unbelievable stat I'm about to read you, because I was thinking about Seattle running backs, and some people are going to think, oh, well, they got Dwayne Brown, you know, the offensive line might be better. Is it worth grabbing a Seattle running back? The answer is absolutely no. Guess how many yards, this is unbelievable, guess how many combined yards Eddie Lacy and Thomas Rawls combined for. So 12 carries between the two of them, 6 carries for Rawls.
It must have been 6 carries for Eddie Lacy. 6 yards or 7 yards or 10, I don't even know. It's bad.
Negative 1 yards total. Oh my God. 6 carries for negative 1 yards for Rawls. And probably my favorite stat of the weekend is Eddie Lacy, 6 carries for 0 yards. It's like,
Yeah, and see, I've got Thomas Rawls stash on one of my teams because that's exactly the best way I could put it is stash, because, I mean, I could say that he's just hanging by a hangnail in terms of staying on my team. I should be demoting him to, like, practice squad or something. But you watch the game with Seattle, and he gets the right touches you want, right on the goal line, a carry. He had a dropped touchdown pass from Russell Wilson. The last 2 weeks, Thomas Rawls has looked so close to getting a touchdown, and I'm like, maybe if he just gets the touchdown, it gets the something to get him going, and he just can't get it done. The only benefit is he's slightly out-touching everyone else and definitely getting the goal line work, but he can't put it in, and it does not look impressive.
Yep, absolutely not. So, you know, I thought of those two running backs, but needless to say, there's no way I'm putting them in the club. You know, they're not going to be able to join the prestigious club that is my waiver wire segment, you know, for running backs. So
no, the only other name I would slightly throw out there on a just deep, you know, if you're in one of those leagues, Seth and I are a couple of them, where it's just there's no one on the waiver wire, Corey Clement in Philadelphia. It seems that he's definitely taken on the second role.
Oh, he's your new he's your new thing. You're all obsessed with Wendell Smallwood, and now it's just shut up about these Philadelphia running backs. It's, you cannot help yourself when it comes to Philadelphia running backs.
Well,
these guys
why.
Don't even do anything, and all of a sudden you're just infatuated with them.
Okay, because here's why. I see the upside. Wendell Smallwood would be good if he just got the ball, right? What a concept. Well, he gets injured, and he apparently loses his starting job, or he's still injured. I don't know. Either one, he's gone. And so now Corey Clement has slid into that role. He's now the pass catcher. He caught a passing touchdown 2 weeks ago. He is getting the second most touchdowns behind Blunt. So it's in a really good offense. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, if you got to get someone who's getting touches on a good offense.
He is not getting a sniff of my waiver wire segment. He's not finding his way in.
I'm not asking you to put him on there.
I mean, just because he's a Philadelphia running back doesn't mean he qualifies as a good waiver pickup.
I mean, I might be a little, you know, non-objective in this case, in this scenario, because it is another Philadelphia person for some reason. But, I mean, you can't deny the fact that he's getting the second most touches at running back.
It's so bad that, like, you just admit that you're not objective about Philadelphia running backs, but it's so bad that you would be not objective when it comes to Philadelphia running backs. Like, what is it about Philadelphia running backs that you just, like, get all hot and bothered about?
Dude, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, what else was I supposed to say?
I don't know. There's nothing you can say except just stop talking about Philadelphia running backs. I mean, I need, like, a mute button. When you start talking, like on Around the Horn, when Tony Reale has the mute button and he can mute people, I need to have a mute button for you. Every single time you start talking about Wendell Smallwood or Corey Clement or, you know, whatever Philadelphia running back is the flavor of the week, I got to be able to mute you.
I mean, I was right about Wendell Smallwood.
Because
he scored 17 points the 1 week that he actually, you know, Darren Sproles went down. I said, go pick him up. He scored 17 points and he got hurt. So what am I supposed to do about that?
I don't know. Anyways, let's move on now. Needless to say, get a little too in the weeds here. there are three. I have three wide receivers on my list. Marquise Goodwin is not one of them. I made the brilliant decision of starting him over Golden Tate because I was so worried about Golden Tate for some reason that I thought it was such a smart idea to keep Marquise Goodwin in my lineup. And of course, he gets 0 points, as only Marquise Goodwin would do to me. I mean, he's coming off a 12-point performance. He had 17 points week five against Indy. I was like, you know what? It doesn't sound great, but I'm going to keep Marquise Goodwin in my lineup. And nothing good ever happens, I'm convinced, when you start Marquise Goodwin.
So that goes without saying.
It does go without saying. But I think the number one pickup this week, which probably won't come as a surprise to most people, is Juju Smith-Schuster. He's owned in only 29% of ESPN leagues, so he's most likely available. He's going to be a top waiver option, and people are definitely going to spend a lot of their fab budget on him coming off the 7-catch, 193-yard performance Obviously, he had the 97-yard touchdown pass, but you take that away, he still had six catches for just about 100 yards, and he had 10 targets. He matched Antonio Brown for targets. He had a drop late in the game, so he could have had even bigger of a day. With no Martavius Bryant moving forward, it's going to be Antonio Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Le'Veon Bell. And I think with all the attention that Antonio Brown garners, I think you're going to see Smith-Schuster be a solid floor and obviously a high upside play on most weeks. They have the bye week, week 9, but Indianapolis, Tennessee, Green Bay, three juicy matchups after that, two of them at home. So I like the schedule, like Juju Smith-Schuster. He is the number one. I would have him as the number one option on my list, and I think he's definitely somebody, depending on where you're at and what your fab budget is looking like at this point in the season, you could spend up to 50% of your fab budget.
Yep, you hit the nail on the head there. I think that you want to obviously temper back expectations after the last game. I mean, that includes a 98-yard touchdown pass. He was definitely looking towards Juju a lot, Big Ben, which was very nice to see. Antonio Brown still had a decent team target share percentage in the mid-20s, so that was still healthy to see that Juju could do that kind of game, have that kind of game, and still have Antonio having a decent team target share percentage. Obviously, though, Detroit played quite well, doubling all game Antonio Brown. That helped a little bit, which is going to, in theory, I guess, happen every game for Juju. We don't know what kind of role Martavis Bryant steps into when he comes back, even like just a little bit, you know, might take away a tiny bit of targets. But if you've held on to your budget to this point, I mean, he is the person at this to spend a lot of it. You can go ahead and overpay if you have a lot of money left, because at this stage of the game, we don't know when you're going to get another potential, and stud's not the right word, but potential blow-up player, what we just saw, in a high-powered offense in Juju Schuster.
Absolutely. So I think he's the number one clear cut, and it feels good to actually be able to put a good player on my waiver wire column in my waiver wire list, because it's been slim pickings these last couple weeks. It's been pretty pathetic. So Juju Smith-Schuster is the headliner for this week's waiver wire players. And number two, another good player, Paul Richardson, absolute massive game against Houston. One of the best games of the entire season. High-scoring game. Both quarterbacks threw for over 400 yards and four touchdowns. Paul Richardson just absolutely dominating. Six catches, 105 yards, two touchdowns. He now has five touchdowns on the season. And this is a guy who has a pretty solid floor. For somebody that has only caught over three catches twice the entire season, including, you know, Sunday being one of them, he's very consistent because of his touchdown output. So, you know, just he's someone that's going to give you 9 points. He's had 9.5 points every single week this season besides one. So a guy that you can throw in your lineup, he's not going to kill you with a zero bomb. And he clearly has some upside if Seattle gets into one of these games that are high scoring. So I like Paul Richardson, not on Smith-Schuster's level, but I think I'd put him at number two.
Yeah, not the first time that Paul Richardson has been on this list, and yeah, I was a big fan of him really early in the season. I thought maybe he'd get some more target opportunity than he really has, and that kind of made him, you know, a little bit hard to hold on to throughout the weeks. Maybe he held on to him because he was consistent with those touchdowns, but I never really loved seeing that very low catch rate to touchdown rate, and in one of my leagues I did move on from him. And kind of same scenario this past week, but we've seen it with Seattle. We've talked about it last week, and you know, again here in the sense that Seattle can't run in the ball for touchdowns. They can't do it. So this is why we've seen Russell Wilson absolutely have blow up spots week in and week out, it seems like. And when that's the case, there's going to be a lot of passing touchdowns to be had. And obviously, Paul Richardson has been the beneficiary all season. So there's probably nothing to really think that nothing's going to change from that.
Yeah. So, again, solid option. you're, you know, at this point in the season, it is just, you know, slim pickings. So Paul Richardson, number two. My third, you know, I can't believe I'm actually saying this because I've just made fun of this guy all season long and poked fun at basically everybody that has him on their roster or played him. But I think it's time to give my boy, my new boy, Josh Doctson, some love here. I mean, Terrell Pryor, we talked about all of the players for Washington just haven't shown up. They need playmaking. They need something out of their offense. And Josh Doctson, and only one catch for 1 yard and touchdown. But, I mean, if you look at his numbers over the past few weeks, it doesn't really look like somebody that you'd want to grab. But, I mean, three touchdowns on the season, it seems like he's getting more looks in the red zone. I mean, definitely not somebody that you can start right away. You play Seattle, Minnesota, so it's probably someone you're going to pick up and stash for the stretch run. And they have some good matchups late in the season against like Dallas, the Chargers, Arizona, New Orleans. So I think Josh Doctson, if you can afford to roster somebody, you know, maybe if you're, you know, 6-1 or you have a winning record and you're not worried about the division, Josh Doctson's an okay person to stash, but he's definitely, I'd say, kind of a shot in the dark type pickup.
Yeah, this is a good, probably a lot better than others in terms of, you know, you could see his role increasing weekly, and you can almost say, hey, this guy's got a legitimate shot at being a, you know, really decent flex starter by the time it comes to playoff time, because we're still talking, you know, 6+ weeks away here. And this is someone that out-touched Terrell Pryor 50-20, obviously only his second year of being an NFL receiver, didn't play at all last year, so he's still learning a lot. Now Jordan Reed, as he does every year, is going to miss some time again. I think he's already been ruled out for week 9. So again, Josh Johnson's getting the snaps. Obviously, weather played a big role in this last game, really, you know, affected both teams in terms of the passing. Not startable, I would say. I would agree with you. But definitely has the upside if you can put him on your bench.
Yeah, and a player that's not making my list, but I would put him on here kind of in the same category as Josh Doctson is Corey Davis. And Corey Davis is somebody that, you know, clearly is the ownership percentage is going to be a lot higher for Corey Davis, given, he's a rookie this season and he's kind of the sexier name going into the season. He's owned in 24% of leagues, whereas Josh Doctson, in comparison, is owned in, well, Josh Doctson's owned in 28%, so very close. Corey Davis has been injured, which is probably contributes to his low ownership percentage. But I put them both in the same category as, you know, players that you can't depend on in the short term, but 3 or 4 or 5 weeks from now, as you get closer to the fantasy playoffs, they could turn a corner and be absolute monsters given their size, given the fact that they're both in decent offenses. So I think at this stage, you're really grasping at straws on the waiver wire. If you can get a receiver that has talent like that and has upside, then, you know, you could do worse than grabbing him.
Yeah, this is a tricky one. Obviously, we haven't seen anything since week 2, and he was getting worked a lot. You know, I think he caught 6 out of his 10 targets in the only games that he played. So, I don't know. It's kind of a shot in the dark, but kind of in the same sense as you mentioned with Josh Johnson, this is not a player that you're putting on your bench and you need an injury, you know, to make them relevant. You just need them to physically get on the field and kind of get in the motions and get in some type of rhythm with their quarterback, which you could easily see with a young receiver towards the end of the season.
Agreed. For tight ends, I really only have one tight end. I don't even feel good about it. It's Vernon Davis, and I feel like I buy into Vernon Davis too often, and he burns me every single time. He's just consistently average. I guess at the tight end position, he's solid. He can get you 10 points. I mean, no Jordan Reed. Niles Paul had a concussion. I mean, Washington's entire team is just a complete – their offense is just an absolute disaster. Outside of Chris Thompson, they've gotten nothing from anybody. Kirk Cousins might be the MVP in the league right now. I mean, with the lack of talent, the lack of weapons that he's had to put up with all season long. But Vernon Davis, I guess, given, you know, in the Zach Miller injury too, the Jordan Reed injury, you might be in a position where you have to go after a tight end. Jordan Reed, I mean, Vernon Davis has got to be the guy, I would think.
Yep, he's going to get a bigger volume, so you got to like that. I think this is another area that you need to work in some additional vocabulary between, like, having a good year to NFL MVP. I mean, maybe he's, like, the team MVP. I mean, maybe I'll take that. But
The guy has 13 touchdowns and 4 interceptions, and he's throwing to Josh Doctson, who hasn't done anything all year, Terrell Pryor, who hasn't done anything all year, Jameson Crowder, up until Sunday, hadn't done anything, Jordan Reed can't stay on the field, Vernon Davis is like 1,000 years old. They've got nothing out of their running game.
Yeah, and
Chris Thompson is contributing to the passing game.
And they're 3-4, so I don't care. I mean, you have Carson Wentz.
The comment was a little bit tongue in cheek. I was clearly joking a little bit, but I will say
you defended it. He decided.
I'm going to go down with the ship with Kirk Cousins. I'm going to defend him until my very last breath.
You know Kirk Cousins, me and Philly and Carson Wentz is like you and Kirk Cousins. Like, you just won't stop talking about him.
Oh, you just slip in like Carson Wentz. No, we're talking about Philly's running back. You can compare it to you and Philly's running backs, which there's no justification for you being obsessed with Philly's running backs. Obviously, no one's going to fault you for being obsessed with Carson Wentz. He's a stud. I mean, I'm starting to get obsessed with him. But
I know, but I talked to him about him before, you know, he was Carson Wentz or what he was this. The same way that you did with Kirk Cousins for multiple years now.
And you still don't own him in any leagues, so I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know either.
Yeah. Well, let's get to my streaming defense, shall we? I mean, let's
wrap this up.
Let's turn it up a couple notches in here. Let's get the temperature rising. That was definitely a Jeffism right there. Let's get the temperature rising. Anyways, it is the Rams defense coming off a bye week. You got to love that. Playing the New York Football Giants, who absolutely have nothing. Absolutely nothing. You're playing Eli Manning, turnover machine. You got to love it. This is a hot Rams defense that just shut out Arizona week 7. Week 6, they scored 2 touchdowns against Jacksonville, against an offense that, you know, Leonard Fournette chugging along, playing pretty well, and then had a really good performance against Seattle, holding them to 16 points. So 3 weeks in a row, giving up a combined, you know, what is it, 33 points in 3 games. Pretty solid. I like them week 9 in New York.
Yep, gotta like it coming off the bye. The one weakness that the Rams has had this season, not necessarily as of late, but it has been on the ground. The Giants don't know how to run the football. So, you know, I think this and the Rams are an opportunistic defense. Eli Manning is a very prone quarterback to turnovers and life in general. So, I think it should be a pretty good day for the Rams defense.
Yep, I think so too. That's why they are my streaming defense. And, you know, my streaming defenses, I mean, what more can you say?
I don't know. What can I say? Well, that is the waiver pickups of the week. We are the NFL Talking Heads. Everyone visit us online at NFLTalkingHeads.com. Find us on social media at NFL Talking Heads. You can follow Seth at Seth_Lull. And thanks for listening.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Try saying that 3 times fast. With your hosts, Jeff Carrier and Seth Lull. We'll catch you next time.